Coming up on the show today, it's all about search. We'll be talking about different kinds of search engines and their ministry applications. We welcome back J.J. Ramberg of Good Search at GoodSearch.com to talk about how you can turn your searches into a penny per search for your charity. And we have a lively discussion about copyright based on the Wells Tech listserv. Coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs, and we're at episode 204 for October 5th, 2011. And joining me, as usual, is the lovely and talented Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. And I have a trivia fact for our Wells Tech listeners today.
Oh, I thought it was going to be for me. I'm glad it's not for me.
Pick your brain a little. Okay. No, I just wanted to let them know where the brains are with our clever show titles. I don't know if everyone knows that you are responsible for the show titles of Wells Tech each week, but this week I actually have a subtitle I want to suggest for you.
Okay.
I know we have a theme picked out. We're going to talk about that in just a moment, but certainly we have a sub-theme for this week, and that's allergy season is upon us or something to that effect. So
if you hear me in particular sniffling through the whole show, you'll know why Sally references that.
But it's a theme. We have to go with it, you know.
And you aggravated yours this past week, didn't you?
I did. It's harvest time and the cornfields around Sleepy Eye, and we managed to take an hour-long hayride as a church fellowship event. But it was
what every allergy sufferer needs is a good old-fashioned hayride. Yes,
all that stuff flying through the air, but worth it. Lots of fun.
All right,
my gear.
That's a great subtitle. I don't know if we can work that in any other fashion throughout the show, but at least we got it here at the top.
There you go.
For those of you,
For
those of you joining us, this little old podcast that we have here for episode 204 really focuses on ministry topics, or topics that have some impact on ministry, obviously technology related. And this particular topic is something that everybody has to deal with day in and day out who uses a computer, and that is search. And I think you've appropriately named the show already here, Sally, called Search Me. We're going to be talking about all things search. There's a shrinking number of search providers out there, and that makes our job a little bit easier in the reviewing side. But there are certain variations to the whole search landscape that we want to discuss. And certainly from the perspective of ministry, there are good reasons that anybody working in a ministry setting, whether that be a church or a school or whatever, needs to get a little bit smarter on search.
Absolutely. It's just kind of an expected skill these days, and you don't want to be behind the curve. You have this information available at your fingertips now, and so being able to search and find the information that you need is a really important skill. Mm-hmm. And as teachers, maybe you use that as you're developing your lessons. Maybe you use it with your students, teaching them how to be efficient searchers as they're researching different topics for classroom projects and things. Certainly a lot of applications in the classroom, and I'm guessing a lot of applications for the pastor types as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously, sermon development, ministry tools of all sorts and shapes and sorts are online now. There's almost anything. There's probably very few things that are not online at this point. So the ability to search for them is key, because you're not always quite sure where they are, and that's why you have search engines. And the two big ones that we'll talk about are Google is still at the top of the heap. It gains the most number of searches of all the search engines by quite a margin. But in second place and gaining a little bit is Microsoft's new search engine called Bing. So let's talk about both of those. And maybe we should start with a little guy, Bing.
the little guy, Bing. And Bing is also behind Yahoo.
Right.
And ultimately behind Good Search. We're going to talk more about Good Search a little bit later. So I did some comparative searches, and I seem to get the feel that Bing is a very timely search engine, Martin. Mm-hmm. You're going to see really recent content coming up in the search, which means it's doing a good job of indexing the massiveness of the World Wide Web on a real timely basis. So you're going to see trending topics there on Bing. You're going to see related searches, things like that, come up for you very easily in the Bing search engine.
I think as I compare Bing and, of course, Yahoo that runs, you know, the Bing search engine, I hesitate to say this, but I think when I search Bing, it gives me the results that I am after, usually within the first two or three. So there's a relevance aspect to it that I think Bing does a good job for. It knows that I'm looking or shopping for something, or I'm looking for this kind of information, and it presents those results in a usable fashion. Compared to Google, which I think does a decent job at that too, I'm not saying that there's a wide gap here, but I think when I use Google there, it's kind of the world, you know, coming onto my screen, you know, at one time, and I have to kind of filter through some of the, what I'll call the cruft, you know, of the search results to get to the one that I need. Now, having said that, I will go to Google if I need to do some real digging. I think it does a little bit better job at kind of uncovering, you know, turning over all the rocks and looking in different corners of the internet for results, where I think Bing kind of insulates you from that and just gives you the things that are most likely to be what you're searching for. That's at least in my experience, and that's not scientific. That's more anecdotal, but I think that's kind of how I compare the two.
I wonder if Bing knows you better because you're using a lot more Microsoft products, using the live website more and things like that.
That could be.
I wonder if it's
although
it's
Google knows us pretty well,
you
too.
Yeah. They know where you shop. They know what you are interested in, for
One thing that that you did, Sally, which is, I think, real helpful as you think about what search engine to use, is compare the sidebars. Every search engine kind of has this sidebar concept where you can filter results. You mentioned what Yahoo and Bing had as far as trending and related topics. One thing I like about Google, which I wish the other search engines would do, is they have something called filter by date. So you could filter by the last, you know, only show me results that they've indexed in the last 24 hours, for instance, or even the past hour, the past day, week, month, year. So if you're just looking for really freshest of all content, you can filter that with a click of the button on Google, which you really can't do on the others. So if I'm really interested in something, you know, a topic that's coming up, and that's kind of what Bing does with their trending topics, but if you're looking for really fresh stuff, then Google has a feature for that.
Another Google sidebar feature that I was excited to discover is something called their timeline. And you can enter a search term and get your results and then click on this timeline link in the sidebar. And it organizes the search results by the dates that are referenced. In other words, if you searched gorilla, you'd get a search result timeline of articles and things going back into the 1600s or the 1700s or whatever. And then you can click into a particular decade or whatever and get more granular with your search results. So it organizes it based on dates, which I thought was really helpful, especially if you're doing some heavy-duty research on a topic.
Oh, and I'm just playing with this now. I didn't even know that existed, but I just did a search on wells, and it's kind of interesting. Whenever you do a search on wells, you get all this Austrian stuff because there is a town called Wells, and they're known for their catfish. So you get a lot of catfish pictures if you search for wells and look at images. But this is really interesting, and I would think that this kind of tool would be great for the classroom with kids doing research on history projects or whatever. where you can get this year-by-year look at the search results. That's awesome.
So the world coming at you, but chronologically, makes it a little bit more reasonable to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. So,
yeah, nice. And there are other nice features with Google. And I'm sure probably Bing has some of those kind of things locked away as well. They try not to overwhelm you on your first search page, but you can get into advanced search. You can get into different slices of the data and things just using some of these sidebar tools that are there mm-hmm. for you.
And we'd probably be remiss if we didn't mention the mobile side of this, as many people are searching on from their phones at this point. And I know, you know, with my smartphone, I often will use it to look up something that came up in a conversation or something, point of interest or whatever. And both Bing and Google have mobile versions, whether you be on Android or iPhone or, of course, Windows 7. And you can pick which one you'd like to use, depending on your preferences. So, and those are as feature-filled as the web versions for the most part.
We'll probably want to include in our show notes a link to some how-to search mm-hmm. topics. And Google has a couple of pages to get you started with different finesse kind of things that you can add to your search. Like if you put a minus in front of a word, it will exclude that word from the search. Or if you put an asterisk in your search, that's considered a wild card. So you could get all the things related to a particular query. So
yeah, those are real helpful because if you're doing a search on Martin Luther, for instance, you're going to get a lot of Martin Luther King results, of course. If you put Martin Luther and then a minus King, you'll filter out all those. So it's helpful to, and probably beneficial to spend a little time getting used to some of those little query tricks that you could use to refine your search and just be a little bit more productive in the time that you spend in those search engines, because you could get lost and spend a lot of time just really trying to hunt stuff down and you could really save yourself some time if you just use some of those tips.
I've never gotten lost in search engines.
Is that right?
Never, no, never.
Always on task, on topic, yes.
Always. Yeah, I'm like all over the place. Uh-huh. But we probably want to mention some other search engines
besides
Bing and Google. There uh-huh. are. And they're probably more specific. And some of them, I guess, wouldn't even call themselves search engines because they're more of an archive or a they add some intelligence to it, mm-hmm. I guess, is one way to say it, in that they filter down the searches on your behalf. They give you answers, not just the world and all the possibilities. And one is one that you're familiar with, Martin, Quora.com.
Quora, right. And the way they describe themselves is a continually improving collection of questions and answers created, edited, and organized by everyone who uses it. The most important thing is to have each question page become the best possible resource for someone who wants to know about the question. So it's a Q&A kind of site that is crowdsourced. So it's a little bit different than Wikipedia. It's a little more of just a Q&A format where somebody asks a question and then people on Quora answer it and then can vote on different answers and then essentially curate the response. I found it to be pretty accurate and very popular. I think it's a great concept and kind of a different take on search because many times you are asking a question of a search engine and this provides an answer with humans involved.
Another one is Wolfram Alpha, which is a knowledge base. They call themselves a computational knowledge engine. And they're all about answering questions as well. But I would say their questions probably are more data-centric.
Yeah.
They can answer math questions and unit questions and things like that. Chemistry and physics, health and medicine, food and nutrition. And it's very, it's a very big view of basically almost academic knowledge about right. a subject. So you get definitions and all kinds of different data related to whatever your question may be.
Yeah, it's a very refined algorithm that's used, and you know, smart guys and gals put this together and tried to anticipate a search question or a search term with smarter than the average bear response, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And you almost, it's almost hard to explain or describe without actually going there and seeing, you know, typing in a few questions and see what you get.
Right. A different slice of search is being able to search Internet archives. And archive.org has the Wayback Machine. Mm-hmm. And on that site, you can actually turn back the hands of time, put in a particular website that you're interested in, and see different captures of the history of that website. So you could put in Wells.net even and see the history of the development of Wells.net. And when I do that, I'm just doing that in real time here, you get basically a calendar that dates back to 1996, mm-hmm. and you can look at different captures of the bulk of the website on a particular date. So if you're interested in how the website looked on December 13th, 1996, you can just click on that and see a snapshot of what Wells.net looked like then.
Or your own website. So it caches it, takes a snapshot, and makes that available. So truly, there is nothing that the web forgets, you know, at least what the Wayback Machine will capture. So, and this has kind of been a lifesaver because sometimes we've even in our own Synod-owned properties, you know, web properties, where we've deleted sites in the past, and then where something happened, and we went back and needed some content, and the Wayback Machine was a real help. So,
yep. And then finally, we'll mention a couple of kid-friendly search sites. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite to work with students is AskKids.com. Ask is an adult search engine. AskKids.com is geared toward children. And it's got a fun interface and then gives them appropriate results for their age. Mm-hmm. And another is Sweet Search For Me. And that URL is Sweet Search with the number 4. me.com.
I've not heard of that one. Is that something that you've come across, Sally?
Yeah, it's just geared toward children as well, and mm-hmm. it's more academic mm-hmm. research for children. Okay. So, and you can actually embed it a search box on your website if you look at some of their widgets and things that are available. Yeah. So we've used that with the students in our computer mm-hmm. settings as
cool.
well.
One thing we didn't mention, which we probably should, for especially those of you that manage technology in our schools, is don't forget about the ability to turn on Safe Search in whatever browser you're making available to your students. Both Google and Bing and Good Search and Yahoo, they all have the ability to have a Safe Search turned on. In fact, most of them have it on by default. I think Google's is on moderate. So if you're, you know, making Google available in the classroom, you may want to change that, lock that down a little bit further. I think Safes are Good Search, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, only has two settings. It's on or off, and it's on by default. And I think that's probably the best approach as well. So don't forget about that, those of you that manage browsers for those school computers.
Absolutely. Well, should we move on to our interview now?
Absolutely, and we were very, very pleased to have J.J. Ramberg come back and join us once again. I think it was way back in April of 2008, and we were just podcasting pups at the time, as we had J.J. on. I think that was like episode 14 or something like that. We were just getting going, and Good Search wasn't even all that old. You'll hear in the interview that it started in, I think, 05, she said. Mm-hmm. And JJ was good enough to come on again and join us and talk about a search engine that can benefit nonprofits. And the Synod has been using Good Search for some time, and as you'll hear in the interview, has raised over $8,000 for the Synod just from people using Good Search and then designating the Synod as their beneficiary. JJ is, I believe, the co-founder, she and her brother, of Good Search, and she'll talk about, you know, how that got started. And again, thank you, JJ, for taking some time with us again to talk about Good Search. So let's listen to our interview with JJ Ramberg of Good Search. Joining us today on the podcast is J.J. Ramberg from Good Search. Welcome back to the show, J.J.
Thanks so much, Martin. Great to be back.
We looked it up, Sally, right? It was probably about 3 years ago we had J.J. on.
April of 2008, so we definitely are happy to have the chance to talk to you again. And I bet a lot has happened in that time.
So much has happened. First and foremost, you guys have raised more than $8,000, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm. How maybe before we start, tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe a little of the history of Good Search. I'm assuming Good Search is older than 3 years. You weren't just new when we first talked to you, I don't think.
No, I'll tell you about myself. I've been involved in philanthropy my whole life, doing various things. I spent a lot of time overseas working for microfinance organizations. And my brother and I, who also both have worked in the internet industries throughout our careers, wanted to come up with a way to sort of combine our desire to do good for the world and give back to the community and help others and everything we learned from working in internet companies. And so I guess about 6 years ago now, we came up with this idea for GoodSearch.com, which is in essence a search engine. It's Yahoo search engine that donates about a penny to your favorite cause every time you search the internet. You know, we just saw how many millions and millions of dollars search engines were making, and we thought, wow, you know, what if we could redirect some of that money to people's favorite causes? Mm-hmm. And so we launched Good Search, and it was, you know, it took off. It was a huge success right from the start.
What year was that you started everything?
We started Good Search in 2005, okay. And then that worked so well, and people responded to it, and we were giving so much money away to good causes that in 2007 we launched its sister site, GoodShop.com. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for Good Shop, we've partnered with more than 2,500 stores, from you know Amazon to Petco to Target and Staples and Macy's, basically anywhere you'd shop at. And if you just click through from Good Shop and shop at the store, a percentage of what you spend goes back to your favorite cause.
Right. So where does, on the Good Search side, where does the money actually come from? Is it through advertising? You have relationships with different folks? Or where does that money actually come from before it gets to us?
It's from advertising. So Good Search works just like any other search engine, you know, Yahoo or Google or Ask or anything you'd use out there. But every time you search, about a penny goes to your cause, and yes, that comes from our advertisers. So, mm-hmm. Okay. So we earn money just as any other search engine does. We just give half of it away. Mm-hmm. But it's powered by Yahoo. So if you go to Good Search and do a search, you're getting the same results as you would if you went to Yahoo and did a search.
Right, right.
And so, what are the qualifications? What are the qualifications for groups that sign up with you? How do you get a piece of that search engine money pie?
It's quite easy, actually. If you go to goodsearch.com, there's a button towards the top which says add a charity or school, and you just click on that. You can add your charity, your school, your church, your religious organization, any cause that you care about. We already work with about 100,000 causes, so chances are your cause may already be listed with us. But we still do get, you know, hundreds of organizations signing up each day.
Wow.
Now, JJ, recently you've made some changes, some improvements, some upgrades. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, we did so many exciting things for Good Search and Good Shop. First, I believe either it was there when we started or we might have added it since, but it's much better now. We have a toolbar which you can download if you like. So if you want, you can make Good Search your homepage, or you can search the same, however you get to your other search engine, you can get to Good Search, your homepage, a plugin, whatever you use. Or you can download our toolbar. It becomes your charity's toolbar. It has their logo on it. It's got the search box, so every time you search, about a penny goes to your cause. But the really cool thing is that it works with your browser. So even if you don't go through Good Shop and you just go directly to one of the stores we work with. So, for example, if you just go directly in your URL address bar to 1-800-Flowers.com, your toolbar will recognize that you are a good shop person on behalf of your cause, and a button will light up that says donation, and it will tell you how much of your purchase is going to be donated, and a button lights up that says coupons, and it lists all of the coupons we have for your cause. So that makes it really easy. And by the way, we list these coupons on the site as well. If you don't want to use the toolbar, you can find these coupons on our site. The beauty of that is that not only are you doing good and helping your cause when you do all your shopping, but you can be saving money at the same time.
Okay. And another feature that you introduced me to the other day is the ability to actually get an account, so to speak, on Good Search. And you can also then track how much you personally have contributed to particular charities.
Exactly. So for the first time, we are now allowing personal registration on the site. And that's very cool because, A, if you want, you can still use the site the old way without registering anonymously. That's fine. But if you would like, you can register on the site. You can keep track of how much you have personally earned. And you can also write messages to your cause and about your cause and why you support your cause. And it's also a fun way to show your cause that you're supporting them. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of people saying, you know, I'm supporting Wells or whatever cause it was, and I'd like them to know, can you please put up a feature so they know that I care about them and I'm supporting them. And another neat thing that we've added is we upgraded our search. So we like to tell people, hey, take the Good Search Challenge. Go do a search for some term on Good Search, and then go do a search on whatever search engine you're using now. And I bet that you will find that the search results are equally good on each of them. But my question is, which one helps your cause every time you do a search? So we challenge everyone to go take the Good Search Challenge.
One thing that you do in our school computer lab is we set all the computers to Good Search as the default search in their browsers. That way the kids, as they're doing their research for school projects and things, are actually earning money for our church and school's Good Search account. So just a little tip for those listening.
That's such a great idea. And I also say, you know, go around and somebody who cares about this, get 10 of your friends to download the toolbar. You know, just sit with them. It takes 2 minutes. And the beauty of that is once the toolbar is downloaded, then all that shopping people are going to be doing in just a couple months from now for the holidays, you know, a percentage of almost everything they buy is going to go back to their cause. It's great because you give a gift to your friend and you give a gift to your cause at the same time.
And stuff
a
that
real
you
win,
would
win.
Yeah, absolutely. Stuff that you would buy anyway online as that's becoming more and more popular.
Yeah, it really adds up. I mean, think about how much we all buy for the holidays, you know. If it's you know, supplies for Thanksgiving dinner or presents for your family, it adds up. And so this is a really good time to remind people about Good Search and Good Shop.
Yeah, and the process you just went through, Sally, is very easy to do. I think in almost every browser you can replace the default search engine if you don't want to use the toolbar because of screen real estate or whatever. There are directions right on the site where you can say, well, how do I put this in Chrome or how do I put this in Internet Explorer so that whenever I do a search, whether it's through the what's called the Omnibar or the Omnibox or the search box in Firefox or whatever, it's really transparent.
And I just want to circle back to what JJ said at the beginning. I'm looking at the Good Search page right now, and Wells has earned over $8,300, almost $8,400 through Good Search. So no work on our part, just the generosity of people doing internet searches has benefited Wells in that way. It's really exciting.
And you know, that is the tip of the iceberg. That's nothing compared to what could be earned if people just get the word out about this. And you know, the beauty of this, why we started this, is we wanted people to incorporate doing good into their everyday lives. We wanted to incorporate into our everyday lives. Frankly, it's, you know, selfishly, we got to launch something that we really cared about and we were very passionate about. And this is just a really easy way to, as you go about your day and you go about the business of searching online and shopping online, of helping an organization that is doing so much good for something that you care about.
So what do you see coming up for Good Search and Good Shop? Are there new initiatives? Are you exploring different areas or just making what you have even better?
So many things, Martin. So earlier this year, we started this organization with my brother, Ken, in 2005. But this year, we were excited and lucky enough to bring somebody new onto our team. We brought a CEO, Scott Garrell, who was the president of Ask.com and mm-hmm. Dictionary.com and a number of other very successful sites. And so with Scott on the team, we are really, you know, making leaps and bounds as far as moving ahead. And if you stay tuned, you will see a number of other good franchises coming out, more ways to help your cause and earn money for your cause by doing simple everyday things. And so, you know, over the next year, we will be launching them one after another. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of contests will be coming up to help people inspire others to use the site. It's also a lot more social than it used to be. So for everyone out there who is on Facebook and Twitter, it's very easy now on the site to get the word out if you want via the social media sites about what you're doing so you can show others how you're supporting your cause.
So what's been the reaction? You're kind of on the promotion marketing side. I'm sure you deal with all kinds of charities, like you know, we touch base on a fairly regular basis. And how is it received, you know, with those people that you talk to?
Well, it's funny. You know, when we first launched, I got a lot of, this is too good to be true.
Right.
I said, I promise it's true. And I had to make it through a few years of sending these checks out every year until I stopped hearing that.
Right. It's real money that the check can actually be cash, yes. Mm-hmm. We can verify that.
Exactly. It's so funny. And so I hadn't thought about that in a while, but I never hear that anymore. Because, mm-hmm. You know, we work with more than 100,000 causes out there, you know, mm-hmm. big ones to really localized ones. But the reaction is always, thank you. I'm so happy there's this way to earn money to give, let all of my supporters support us. And from the supporter side, actually, it's been interesting. The past few years, as you guys know, has just been tough. The economy has been tough. And so this really gives way for people who maybe can't write a check or can't write as big a check or doesn't have time to volunteer right now because they're busy looking for a job or something. It gives them a way to continue to support their cause, which makes them feel good.
No, it makes sense, and it's just good stewardship. I kind of equate at least Good Shop to the, you know, the SCRIP program that is in a lot of our schools. Just the ability to leverage what you're going to spend already, whether it be on gas or groceries, and here it's just kind of in an online way and very easy to do, where you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we always talk. There's lots of talk around the holidays of how, you know, we are a spending culture, and it's really nice to give people things, and everyone loves giving and receiving gifts. But it's also nice during that time to remember the causes that you care about. And so if you can do them both at the same time, I think it's a good combination.
Okay. Very good. JJ, thank you for your time. Those of you that have not heard of Good Search or Good Shop, it's real easy. Just go to goodsearch.com or goodshop.com, and all the stuff is there, the toolbars, the ability to add a charity, to the ability to track your contributions, those kinds of things. Just you've made it very simple, and appreciate you coming on the show again.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope that the $8,300 that we've earned for Wells turns into, you know, 83,000 this year.
Me too.
And all of your listeners go ahead and start using it on behalf of a cause they care about.
Very good. Thank you, JJ.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Good to have JJ back, Sally.
Yeah, she's got a lot of energy. We mm-hmm. recorded that early on a Monday morning, and you couldn't tell from all the excitement that she has about the work that she does. Mm-hmm. It's really a neat vision that they had to start Good Search and then Good Shop.
Yep.
Looking forward to more good stuff coming from them with their new CEO.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's good things in store. And I use I use Good Search now almost exclusively, unless I have to do some real serious digging, then I'll maybe switch over to Google once in a while. But by and large, Good Search does the job for me, and just feels better to search, you know, with Good Search, as we're trying to make a difference here. And you know, even though it's a penny a search, it's a penny makes a difference sometimes. So
yeah, with our church and school, we signed up for Good Search as well. So we've been getting some of that Good Search dollars in our direction as well. And like I mentioned in the interview, we use it on our computer labs, computers. So the kids are using it for search when they're doing research. And I also set up a quick URL that would take people directly to Good Search and designate our charity, our school, as their search partner. So that might be something you want to look into. For us, stjohnssc.com/goodsearch takes them directly to the site. So getting them there and getting the charity selection is the important thing.
Yep. Let's move on to news in tech, Sally.
Sure. There was a big announcement that came out from the Amazon folks last week related to their Kindle. And boy, just in time for all those people who are considering Christmas shopping list. They have not one, but three new Kindles to announce. One that's more of a traditional Kindle that's going to be at a low price point of $79. One called a Touch, which has a touchscreen computer and a keyboard on it at $149 or just $99 for the Wi-Fi version. And then the big announcement was Kindle Fire, Martin. Did you get excited about that Fire announcement?
No, I'm kind of tableted out. But I think this does hold some hope. And there is, I think, some bona fide uses for kind of the 7-inch tablet form factor. And obviously, it's very integrated with Amazon. So if you are an Amazon user, whether that be for their music or their books or their growing movie collection, this seems like a good media device. This is not probably something that's going to have a ton of apps, at least right away, like the iPad does, or even real great at input, because I don't even think it has a camera. So it's kind of a read-only device from what I can tell. But the price is very appealing. It's essentially less than half the price of an iPad. So I think in that regard, there's a lot of promise here. In fact, I read some news articles the other day that they're actually taking a loss, Amazon is, on every device they sell. So that tells you a little bit about what the play is here. They're really pushing their content, which makes sense. Amazon is a content company. They want you to, you know, use their content, buy more stuff, use their shopping cart, and you know, we'll see how it goes. But it looks pretty promising. It's based on the Android operating system. They've kind of put a shiny front end on it and actually built an entirely new mobile browser called Silk, which optimizes the experience. They cache all their Amazon content and pages, and from what I'm told, it seems like a good experience.
So $200 price point, that's a lot more affordable. Color, touch screen, and I had to laugh because apparently there was some quote somewhere along the line that the Kindle is not for Angry Bird players, but this new Kindle Fire has Angry Birds on it, so yeah, you can have your Angry Birds and read your ebooks as well, all in one nice color device.
And I'm assuming one of the best features of the Fire will be its ability to play the Wells Tech podcast. That's just an assumption, but I think that's entirely possible.
We do have our priorities,
don't
we?
That's right.
All right,
let's move on to picks of the week, Sally.
Well, you're going to get a math-oriented pick of the week for me this week. Actually, not one, but four, because I'm in math world these days. We are right in the midst of the American Math Challenge, and you can get to that website.
I remember this
from our show notes. We talked about it last year. It's a really slick interface that the kids can compete against others from around the world in math competitions. And the big dates to remember are October 12th and 13th, so coming up next week. But you can actually sign up for your account, get your school all registered, and do some practicing between now and then. And all of this is available for free. After October 13th, when the American Math Challenge passes, then you can continue with the website if you pay a fee. But for now, get your kids in there, get your school competing in the American Math Challenge. And they just love this stuff. They get to create a little avatar and compete in these various exciting challenges with others from around the world. They earn badges and things like that. Mm-hmm. And along those same lines, we're gearing up at our school for the first year of Math Counts. Math Counts is a national program. It's sponsored by Raytheon and other major corporations in our area. Actually, we have a 3M plant in New Ulm. Right. And they sponsor all the local teams and pay their entry fees to be part of the Math Counts competition. It's kind of like a Knowledge Bowl kind of format where the kids go and compete as a team as well as individuals doing really amazing math problems for middle schoolers. And ultimately, the winners of the state level competition get to go to Orlando, Florida in the spring and compete at the national level.
Nice.
And so first year for us is a Math Counts school. It's for grades 6 through 8. They have awesome resources online. They will send you a free club in a box where they have just tons of resources they put together just to excite children about math and the fun that they can have doing math, which of course translates into kids that are ready for technology leadership roles in the future.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of other math sites, Math Moves You is done by Raytheon in conjunction with the Math Counts website. And a new website that's recently gone free is Manga High, which has mathematics games for kindergarten through 12th grade. And you can create a teacher account there and then manage your class and give them challenges. And again, they can earn badges and all kinds of exciting things. So not one, but four picks of the week, all math-centric this week.
Nice. And the first one you mentioned was is at mathletics.com, American Math Challenge, / American Math Challenge. So is that for all grade levels as well, Sally, the American Math Challenge?
You know, I believe it is, kindergarten through 12th,
okay.
Yes.
Nice. I'm mm-hmm. just looking at their site. 7 days, 13 hours, 19 minutes, and 13 seconds left, so...
Countdown is on.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good stuff. Mm-hmm. You'll have to give us a report on how your kids do. My pick of the week is very similar, kind of a similar vein to last week. Last week I talked about a plugin called Task Force for Gmail, which allows you to turn email into tasks, which is very useful. Productivity tip. This one is also a... I'm not sure it's called a plugin. I guess it is. It's a web app called Gmail Offline. Some of you that use Gmail, and I know many of you do, may remember the old Google Gears days. Well, Google kind of put that one to bed and said, you know, we're not going to support Google Gears anymore. That was the ability to store content offline, because obviously Google is a cloud company, but there is a need at times for you to access your content, whether that be email, documents, whatever, when you're not on the internet, and that was their solution for it. Well, they've revamped all that, and now they're turning these things into apps. So Gmail Offline is one of those apps that allows you to take your email and read it and respond to it when you're not on the internet. Now, you need Google Chrome, the browser, to be able to run this since it's a Google Chrome app. So it's an ability, again, as I said, to set it up. You click it once, and it begins to synchronize all of your online email into your offline, onto your hard drive, basically. So it allows you to, you know, jump on a plane or whatever, wherever you are that where you don't have internet access, and load up Gmail offline and essentially work with your email just as if you were online. And then once you go back online, then it synchronizes and sends the email and so on and so forth. So I think that was a gap that probably prevented some people from going the Gmail route because they didn't have their email local to them in case they weren't on the internet. But this little free plugin allows you to take that Gmail offline.
You know, I've always been a fan opposed to web-based email for that very reason. Mm-hmm. Always been a fan of an email client like Outlook or Thunderbird. And So Google's just kind of closing the gap on all of those obstacles, basically.
Yeah, and they recognize that is a gap, and that was a barrier to some people making that switch. So they're gonna try and address that. So we'll see where that goes. But that seems like a real positive step for them to be able to entice people over to their Gmail client. And I like Gmail. Gmail is a very slick interface. I think they do email well. I use it for my personal email, and this just kind of adds the one component that I think was missing.
Sure.
Shall we move on, Sally, to community feedback?
We better get started with it. We have quite a bit to share this week. Starting with a comment that circles back to episode 201, where we had heard from Pastor Clint Rogas. He was looking for a solution for shut-ins and getting them the audio of the worship service each week. Moving away from cassette tape days, that's kind of a thing of the past now, and wondering if an MP3 player might be a good solution for them. But with the limitations, the small size and kind of difficulty in operating most MP3 players, at least the affordable ones, he was looking for a solution, basically. And on the Wells Tech listserv, Jason Wignett shared an idea of using CD players and producing CDs each week for the shut-ins, and that might be a good interim solution until a more appropriate MP3 player is developed for that kind of usage. And actually, I sent the message right on over to Pastor Rogas, and he wrote back and said that's exactly what they had decided to go with, was the CD solution for now. So it seems like a win-win.
What do you use there in Sleepy Eye, Sally? Do you use tapes or do you use CDs?
Interestingly, we don't deliver things directly to our shut-ins. We record video for several, actually, local TV stations. We're on in New Ulms, Sleepy Eye, and Springfield, and multiple times during the week. And so all of our shut-ins are able to see the service via television.
Gotcha. That makes it easy.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody has that ability. So if you have that need, then that's going to be a question you're going to have to answer as well. We just started doing DVDs in our church. We have a DVD duplicator, and our shut-in pastor will take those around. So we'll see how that goes.
How many DVDs can you duplicate at one time?
We got a 1 to 3, so we can do three at a time. And it's pretty speedy. It's a 12, I think it's a 16 speed. So that makes pretty quick work of a typical service. So.
Sure. Very good. All right. We have a bunch of links to share from our DIGO Wells Tech group, and it's easy to be part of that group and to share things there by tagging things with the Wells Tech tag for the group. Mm-hmm. And several of these links, Martin, were shared by you, so maybe you should talk about these that are first on the list.
Real quickly, the first one was a blog post called Parenting in a Digital Age. And it kind of talked about the challenges that parents need to overcome to have conversations with their children about who they are, how they use social networks, how they use the web, how they search, all those kinds of things. And there's been all kinds of studies about cocooning and kids spending too much time in front of the computer. And you know, these are the same arguments that were used about, you know, too much time in front of the computer or video games or whatever. So the same still applies here. So just a nice quick article and list some tips in there that parents may want to consider. The next one was from Lifehacker, and many of you maybe are familiar with Magic Jack. Magic Jack was one of the first, and it was kind of an infomercial. It got it started in infomercials, so it was a little I was a little suspicious at first about Magic Jack in general, but it's turned out to be, you know, a viable alternative to the telephone, where you just plug in a little dongle to your computer, and it kind of acted as a in a kind of a Skype fashion, where you could make regular old phone calls over the internet, you know, voice over IP type conversations. And there was a fee for Magic Jack. It wasn't very much. I think it was like $25 or something like that a year. But Magic Jack now has an iPhone app, and I believe it's free. I'd have to check on that, but I think it is free, where if you install this, then you can make voice over IP phone calls right from your phone using the the data plan that you have, and then those would be free as well. So that's something to take a look at this in this blog post. And then finally, on the classroom or on the education side, the Encyclopedia Britannica now fits into an app. And I think this is primarily like an iPad app where you could have, remember those, we had a whole shelf, Sally, of the Encyclopedia Britannica, nice gold leaf pages and hardcover and thousands of dollars. We would get the we wouldn't get one, but maybe once every 6 years or so to keep them updated. But you can still see these in the library, I think, some places. But now it's all in an app. The entire Encyclopedia Britannica fits on your mobile device, and this is a little blog post about that news. So that's kind of exciting.
Yes, it is. A few more links in the DIGO group. One is an article I came across just last week that Bethany Lutheran College was recently scored eighth in ranking of all the national college admission websites. Hmm. So not just, you know, the top 100 or something, but they were in the top 10 of all college websites for their admissions website. And this was an evaluation of nearly 3,000 colleges and universities. So I want to send our congratulations out to them, and I'll have a link in the show notes to their admissions website. If you haven't been there, you might want to check it out. Sounds like a great site.
Yeah, I wonder if we should try and get somebody from Bethany on the show to talk about that. That's exciting stuff.
That is very exciting. A link shared by Randy Nesbitt to Verso, a Christian ebook store that's out on the web at verso.com. That's V-Y-R-S-O. And many of their ebook titles are only 99 cents. So if you're interested in a particular Christian author, you may find ebooks here at a really great price. So check that out. Mm-hmm. And then one that I just read about this morning, Martin, that I hurried and added to our show notes is called Otixo. And I wanted to add this before you found it because you're just our productivity guy. And I found one before you did. Anyway, this one is related to cloud file storage. And basically, it's a website where you can link all your different file storage locations like Google Docs and Picasa and Dropbox. And then easily access all of your files from these different locations via this one spot on the web or on your mobile device. And you can move files from one spot to another if you desire. You can edit from this website and save them back to where they were located or save them to a different location. It's basically combining all your clouds into one for you. So I was impressed by the number of different sites that you can include. You know, like I said, it does include Dropbox. It includes Google Docs. It includes Picasa. It also has SugarSync and the Amazon S3, plus FTP sites that you have access to, and your Apple Mobile Me sites. So a place to combine all those clouds in one. The interface is something like a Windows Explorer kind of interface where you can see your folders and your different files that are stored there and things. And seems like a great way to combine your clouds. Actually, they called it lassoing your clouds or whatever. You know, it's really hard to lasso cats or whatever the old joke is. They're doing it here on Otixo.
Interesting.
Otixo.com.
I know what I'm doing after the show here.
I gotcha.
I noticed that what's really interesting is you can mount Otixo as a network drive and manage all your files in all those online services directly from either the Apple Finder or Windows File Explorer. So it can appear to your computer as local storage, which is really a productivity boost. And you don't have to go to the web at all. It just acts something like a map drive, you know, on your computer. Mm-hmm. And that's really a time saver. So
and I see one more vendor, Box.net, is also
that would make sense, yeah. I wonder if they do anything with Pogo Plug. That's one of the ones that I use too, so.
Okay.
Very good. Nice find. She's gaining on the in the productivity race. The race
there you go.
Race for productivity. So we have a few more, Sally, right?
We do. We better get through the rest of our list. We heard from listener Ryan Rosenthal, who teaches at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and he sent us some instructions for a do-it-yourself stylus. Mm-hmm. So he mentioned that he had heard us talk about, I think it's our, like, they're Pogo styluses,
yep.
aren't they?
And that's a vendor. I'm holding mine right now, my hot pink
yep.
one.
Your hot pink one, mm-hmm. I can only imagine. Mm-hmm. And he had a way of using an empty pen cartridge and some sponge material to build your own stylus, and the price was right. And so if you're into do it yourself, maybe you want to build a bunch for classroom usage or something like that, you might want to check out this information, and we'll figure out a way to share that in the show notes. It was a blog post or something that Ryan had sent to us, so we'll try to find the linkage and everything to make sure you can look at those instructions.
Yeah, very creative. I was just reading an article last night on somebody who figured out how to kind of engineer a paintbrush so that you could paint on an iPad, because a lot of artists will use these, but it's hard to, you know, get a tool that'll work well. But they had you taking the bristles out and replacing them with something that was more suitable that the iPad would actually read. Sounded like a lot of work because you can buy one for $14. But if you're the do-it-yourself kind of person, perfect for you.
There you go. We had a tweet from Jason Schmidt that I wanted to share, and it actually kind of ties to your pick of the week, Martin. This is a link to an article about Google Docs being available offline as well. So you talked about Gmail being available offline. Google Docs can go offline with the Chrome plugin as well. Mm-hmm. And I got a real kick out of Jason's tweet because you know how people kind of run together their words for a fun hashtag. And his hashtag was, "My life is complete." So apparently Jason is really happy to have this Google Docs plugin.
Well, thank you, Jason, for taking my next week's pick.
There you go. Got to work a little harder now.
Yeah.
And then finally, Martin, you were going to talk about that recent chatter that's been going on the Wells Tech listserv about copyright.
Oh, yeah. We agreed to that at the beginning of the show,
didn't we?
That I was going to talk about this. Yeah. For those of you not familiar with the Wells Tech listserv, really great discussion forum and fairly active from time to time. For Wells folks who have technology questions, and one of the questions that gets raised once in a while is the age-old copyright question and what kind of licensing services are out there. And there are two major ones, CCLI and OneLicense.net, and the very good discussion about which one is better, which one covers more. Are they legit? Those kinds of questions. And they reference a previous discussion we had a couple years ago, and we do have a wiki page that talks about copyright and all good resources. And copyright is such a muddy, can be such a muddy area that it's important to discuss these things and make sure that your church or school is doing things the right and legal way. And both of these, the services that are talked about in this listserv discussion are a valuable one as people determine what's best and share some of their experiences as well, which is really helpful. So check out that listserv. If you want to get involved with that, it's really easy to do. Just go to our show notes page, at wellstech.wells.net. And down, I think in the right-hand column there is a link to the listserv, and one of those links will get you signed up. So
I got to do a correction on you, Martin. We've redesigned our Wells Tech website.
And now it's across
the top. And actually
the
listserv is on the top with the social buttons. It's the fifth button across the top. So just use that link in the social button area.
We've iconized, yes,
there you go.
Our approach there. So thank you for the correction. Let's talk about next week. We are returning to the book that we started last month, The Church of Facebook, and we talked about the introduction. Now we're going to be diving into Chapter 1, so you still have time if you'd like to follow along at home to grab the book, The Church of Facebook by Jesse Rice. And I'm looking forward to our continuing discussion because it really talks about social networks and their impact on the church from the church's perspective. So interesting book. So join us next week for that conversation.
I grabbed the Kindle version, and I'm enjoying it in my Kindle Cloud Reader that you told us about a few weeks ago, as well as having the ability to read it on my iPad. So,
yep. Let's close the show with the music of Revelation from Wisconsin Lutheran College, their song Shine on Us from their album Led by the Light. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.